Two nights and 18 matches later, WrestleMania 36 is in the books. The pay-per-view has gone off the air, WrestleMania 36. All the controversy, all the talk about empty arenas and being taped in two nights, it's all over. We have reached the finish line. Drew McIntyre is the new WWE champion. The Firefly Funhouse was something. It was definitely something. I'm going to have a lot to say about that as we go along here. And I am the Solid Monster. This is your Sound Off Extra review for night two of WrestleMania 36 from the WWE Performance Center in Orlando. And if it's any consolation to those of you who were planning on being at the show, apparently it was a rainy, nasty day in Tampa, and it would have rained for at least the beginning part of the pay-per-view had it been in the stadium as originally intended. So I know that's a small consolation to a lot of people, but it would have been a little wet in Tampa had the show gone on as they had originally planned. I look back at what we saw tonight. I look back at the card from top to bottom. And I think if I had to say, you know, which night would I prefer over the other, I think I'd give the edge to night one. I actually think night one was a little bit, like, slightly better than night two. On the whole, this did not feel like a WrestleMania. We knew it wasn't going to feel like a WrestleMania. It can't feel like a WrestleMania when you have no fans in attendance. It's just not. You can't replicate that feeling. Everything that makes WrestleMania what it is gone. It is stripped away. So when I judge it just as a show, overall, I thought overall it was good, and that's the best thing I can say about it. When I combine both nights together, there was some good stuff. There was some not-so-good stuff. I have to give the edge to night one. There really was not enough on this show for me to sit here and tell you that this was a thumbs-up show. There were entertaining parts of it, but I think last night was a little bit stronger, which isn't saying much because I think I went, what, six and a half last night was what I gave the show? I really can't go higher than that. This show, maybe five and a half. You know, the effort was there. I'm not taking anything away from the effort. Edge and Orton, I'm going to have a lot to say about that as well. That was a disappointment. They went almost 40 minutes. Edge and Randy Orton went almost 40 minutes in that match. That match had no business going 40 minutes. They went way too long in that match. People are filtering in right now to the chat. I want to say hello to everybody who's been dropping Super Chats since before I even went live tonight. The messages were rolling in, so everybody come on in and join. Unfortunately, I was told that last night a lot of people didn't get the notification that I was going to be going live, which sucks. That's on YouTube. I guess people have been having YouTube issues with the notifications for a while now. And what you see there on your screen is the notification bell. So for those of you who are not aware, when you sub, you're supposed to get notifications about new content and live streams. When you do subscribe, there's going to be a little bell. You can hit that bell and adjust your notifications. I'm not sure, maybe some people don't have their notifications on. Maybe it's limited notifications. So be sure to hit that bell when you sub to the channel. It's very important. Otherwise, you may not be made aware of what is going on. So please go ahead and do so. Thank you to everybody who has already started the Super Chat party here tonight. You can donate. Super Chats are open. I'll be reading messages throughout the night. And for this very special occasion, if you look down below in the description, you will see some additional WrestleMania-themed Super Chats corresponding to certain WrestleMania numbers. So you are free to certainly use any of those if you would like to do so. And Brittany Berry, thank you for the $20. Joe Olivo and Savage King getting us started here tonight on the Super Chat train. Let's get right into it here. Let's not waste any more time. The kickoff show, we had a one-hour kickoff on both nights. And the kickoff here on night two was Liv Morgan taking on Natalya. Why, you may ask? Good question. I don't really have a good answer for you. They just wanted to get them on the show. They put the two of them together. They ended up having, the match was fine. Nothing overly special. Natty got her in a surfboard. You could hear Liv screaming and shrieking throughout the empty building. Liv hit a drop kick to the back. Natty hit a face buster for a near fall. So they trade roll-ups back and forth. And on the final one, Liv Morgan catches her and gets the three. And just like that, Liv Morgan picks up the win. We got started early tonight with the WWE special, as I call it, the roll-up, the dreaded roll-up. The match was okay. Stephanie McMahon, she greeted us again in studio for night two. They played the same long pirate intro from last night. Got to see Roman Reigns again and all the usual faces. And we got to Gronk, who welcomed us to night two. And then we went to the opening match. A fine choice for an opening match. Charlotte Flair challenging Rhea Ripley for the NXT Women's Championship. Tom Phillips and Byron Saxton were back on the call. I thought that this was an excellent opener. Much better than night one. But I was not a fan of the finish. Was not a fan of them putting over Charlotte Flair here in this match. Maybe it was foolish of me to pick Rhea. I did pick Rhea to win. I hoped that she would win. I had picked her. I had predicted that she would win. So, of course, I feel stupid. Everybody said to me, how can you bet against Charlotte Flair? Charlotte, look at the way that she's positioned. They want Charlotte to get to her father's record and break her father's record soon. And how do you do that? You keep shoveling championships in her face. So now tonight, I guess this was championship number 11, I guess. Is that what they were calling it? She had 10 titles coming in. So now she has title number 11. These women were screaming practically the entire match, which is good. I mean, the more noise, the better. It was a very physical match. Charlotte was very cocky early in the match. She was chopping Rhea, went to go send her into the ropes, and Rhea reversed, and Charlotte was in mid-stride. She was doing the old Flair flip in the corner. As she's doing the Flair flip, Rhea kicks her right in the face. And then she hit the Riptide finish, and they got me. I have to say, they got me. They got me even if just for a split second. They got me. I thought that the match was over right there. What better way to put Rhea Ripley over than beating Charlotte Flair in the first 2 minutes of their match? But Charlotte, of course, kicked out. And the story of the match was Rhea working, or rather Charlotte working over Rhea's knee. Obviously setting her up for what was to come at the end of the match. And so she's working over the knee. Rhea was selling this knee like a pro. And when she would go on offense, it was one of the things I like about Rhea Ripley. So when she would go on offense, she was slapping the knee. She was doing, you know, all of these things to make you think she's trying to get some blood circulation back in the knee. You know, just professional type shit that she was doing. I was very impressed by Rhea Ripley in this match. Charlotte is very good. When Charlotte is on, she is very good. She's very good here in this match. But I was impressed by what we saw from Rhea Ripley here tonight. Now, later on, she locked Charlotte in the standing cloverleaf. Charlotte, though, she's so damn tall that she was touching the mat. I mean, I think that moves it looks the best whenever Rhea is able to put it on somebody who's short, because then they're just dangling. They're hanging in midair, you know, as she has the move applied. So with Charlotte, again, she's so damn lanky and so long that she was basically pushing off the mat. Charlotte slips out, goes for the figure four. Rhea fights her off. Charlotte puts her in a Boston Crab. They exchange roll-ups for two counts. More roll-ups here. Roll-ups for two counts. Charlotte goes for her terrible moonsault. Overshot it again. I don't know why she insists on doing it, but I sound like a broken record at this point. She goes for the figure four. Transitions into the figure eight. And Rhea Ripley taps out. She is screaming in agony, but she taps out. She can take the pain no longer. And Charlotte is once again the NXT Women's Champion. Her second run, her second reign as the NXT Women's Champion. And look, they obviously think that Charlotte being on NXT is going to help NXT on Wednesdays against AEW. Okay, it's obvious that that's what they think. The thing about it, though, is if you remember, Charlotte had a match with Bianca Belair not too long ago. About a month ago, month and a half ago, she was already on NXT television, and I don't recall it making a lick of difference. Now, that was 1 week. Maybe if they start matching Charlotte up against some new opponents, maybe, you know, people will become suddenly interested. I don't see that sudden interest coming from out of nowhere. You know, Charlotte is not going to bring in all these new eyeballs to NXT. She'll have new opponents to work with. Good for her. What does that do for Rhea? I'm not sure. I thought this match was excellent. I really did. I thought this match was excellent. You know, one of the good things about it is, as good as this match was, the way that, this all played out, I would imagine this is not the last time we're going to see these two in the ring together. So I would not mind seeing a rematch between Charlotte and Rhea. That's the only, you know, good thing I can say, you know, coming out of this match, trying to be positive and optimistic about it, but not the finish I would have gone with. I was not a fan of that finish. I was a fan of the match. I thought it was an excellent choice for an opener. And at no point during that match was Rhea positioned to look anything less than. She was Charlotte's equal the entire way through. And I thought she had a great showing for herself. Her stock went up even higher in this match. She had a hell of a November. You know, the end of 2019 was huge for Rhea. And I think her first match at WrestleMania was a total thumbs up. This is one of the best things on the entire show. Then we had Aleister Black against the almighty, still the almighty, Bobby Lashley. But before we get to that, let me shout out some more of you crazy people in the chat. Shout out to everybody, all of our mods, doing God's work here tonight in the chat for all of you. Savage King, thank you. Strong Phoenix, thank you for the $2. I appreciate that. We've got, my goodness, they're coming in like crazy here. I promise I'm going to get to each and every one of you, though. Savage King, I said, Chaotic Dragon, 1,000. I know you from last night. Thank you for the $5. JWD82X says, felt very badly for Drew. Happy he won, but yeah, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? As I see Mr. Miz in his fighting stance popping up on screen, that's the WrestleMania 35 donation. So thank you for that from KJ from OC Podcast. And Thaniel O'Neill, thank you. And Raymond the Mountie Medina with the WrestleMania 28 Super Chat. And Austin Sanders, thank you for the $5. So Aleister Black and Bobby Lashley. Aleister comes out. He's got horns on the shoulders of his vest. He looks very demonic, so he looks very much like Aleister Black as he walks out here. He looks as you would expect Aleister Black to look. And then out comes Bobby Lashley. And Bobby Lashley comes out, and he's wearing long pants. I guess because he doesn't want to get any of the disease on his knee. Maybe he's being overly protective, I guess, of his health here. Somebody has to be. This company sure as fuck isn't. So Aleister goes for a springboard moonsault at one point from the second rope, second turnbuckle, to the outside, lands on his feet, and Lashley grabs this guy, and he throws him. He gives him a belly-to-belly overhead throw right on the floor. You know, sometimes you forget, even though he's really not positioned as being anything special anymore, but you forget how freaking powerful Bobby Lashley is. And then I'm reminded when he came back to WWE, there was actually some excitement. There was some excitement about the idea that maybe we would get a Bobby Lashley Brock Lesnar match one day in WWE. What year did Lashley come back? What was it? 2016, 2017, 2018. We still have no Brock Lesnar Bobby Lashley match. It's kind of surprising. You would think they would have done it by now. That was the only real thing I was interested in when it came to Bobby Lashley, and we still haven't even gotten the match. So Lashley and Aleister are in the ring, and he gets Aleister up on his shoulder. He's going to go for the Dominator, the old Ron Simmons move. Instead of letting him hit the move, Lana, the airhead that she is, she jumps up on the apron and she commands her man. She says, no, hit the spear. Hit the spear instead. Now, why she wouldn't let him hit the move and then hit the spear? Well, she's an airhead, that's why. So he drops Aleister, he blows her a kiss, the kiss of death, right? He should have watched the Daniel Bryan Sheamus match from WrestleMania 28. He could have seen this coming. He goes for a spear, he runs right into Black Mass. And Aleister Black scores the pin and wins the match. The correct outcome, Lana looks like an idiot. It's like saying, no, don't shoot him, stab him instead. Put the gun down and go grab a knife. That's Lana in a nutshell here. We got an ad for Money in the Bank. Money in the Bank is still scheduled. Money in the Bank is coming up on May 10th on the WWE Network. We'll see about that. I'm not a betting man, but if I were to put money down on it, I would say probably not going to be getting Money in the Bank this year. But they're still airing commercials for it. They're forging ahead. Nothing is going to stop WWE from getting their shit in. So we got Money in the Bank coming up on May 10th. If they go through with it and if they can dig up his corpse. Give it to AJ Styles. We haven't seen AJ Styles win Money in the Bank yet, I don't believe. He's got nothing else going on. Took a dirt nap last night. Can dust him off. When the time is right, he can work his way back into the championship picture. And then on the women's side, give it to Sasha Banks. After what we saw tonight, it can actually fit perfectly, I think, in with the ongoing storyline between Sasha Banks and Bayley. It could provide a little bit more intrigue as to what Sasha Banks will do. She doesn't have to turn on Bayley, but what if she wins Money in the Bank? She can cash in on any champion she wants to. I'm sure Bayley would like to persuade her to cash in on Becky Lynch. Maybe she can cash in on Charlotte Flair. They're actually, you know, now that I think about it, we've got all of the horsewomen except Sasha Banks, who now have titles in WWE. Becky Lynch is the Raw Women's Champion. Bayley is the SmackDown Women's Champion. And Charlotte Flair is the NXT Women's Champion. Sasha is the only one without a championship. So if Sasha were to win Money in the Bank and everybody else held on to their titles for at least a few more months, that provides a lot of intrigue. Which one of her fellow friends, which one of her horsewomen is she going to cash in against? Seems to make sense to me. Sasha Banks should win Money in the Bank. Sasha Banks should win all the titles. So Michael Cole and JBL were back, unfortunately. JBL. They replaced Tom Phillips and Byron Saxton on commentary. Rob Gronkowski is telling us he wants to win the 24/7 championship. Who gives a fuck? Who cares? Who cares? You know what I care about? I care about Otis and Dolph Ziggler. This is the match that I care about. This is what I came to see here at WrestleMania. This is the story that I've been following now for months and months and months. Best story going on SmackDown. And it all culminates here at WrestleMania, or at least the next chapter of it here at WrestleMania with Otis and Dolph Ziggler. Sonya Deville was in Dolph's corner. Not a very smart move if her goal is to ask for forgiveness from her best friend Mandy Rose. I don't know why she would be managing Dolph Ziggler. It is possible I missed the segment that explained it. Maybe I looked away, but I didn't see anything that would explain why she would be managing Dolph. Not if she's trying to get back into Mandy's good graces. So they're going back and forth, and Otis slams Ziggler, and he goes for the caterpillar. Sonya Deville jumps up on the apron, and so Otis stops mid-move, and Ziggler kicks him in the dick from behind, kicks him in the balls, kicks him in his little Otises, with the referee's attention diverted, and down goes Otis. All of a sudden, Mandy's theme song hits. Out comes Mandy Rose. She smacks Sonya in the face and wrestles around with her. And then she gets into the ring and she, again, behind the referee's back, his attention is diverted, and she gives Dolph Ziggler a low blow. Otis does the caterpillar, hits the elbow, and he scores the pin on Dolph Ziggler. All is right with the world. Mandy gets back in the ring. She's celebrating with Otis. Otis picks up Mandy Rose. And then the greatest moment in the history of WrestleMania, well, maybe not, but one of the greatest moments in WrestleMania history comes next. You see it on your screen when Creepy Jeff Hardy leaves with all the super chat. Whoa, $75. Hey, bring that back. Holy shit, I missed that one. Who was that? I'll get to you in a second. But there it is. There's the money shot. Otis sucking face with Mandy Rose. Look at Mandy sucking on Otis's lips. Look at this beautiful image. I'm going to make this my wallpaper. Literally, I'm going to make this my actual wallpaper on my walls here in the room. And then I'll film it. I'll be on video. My backdrop will have Mandy and Otis on my wall. Look at this guy. Look at this fucking guy. My man Otis finally gets the big payoff at WrestleMania. But the worst part about this, the worst part of this whole thing, is that this should have taken place in front of 75,000 people. And that, to me, is the biggest crime of all. What a reaction that would have gotten in front of a live audience. That's my only regret. It is really too bad. It's too bad. But good for Otis. Good for Otis, my man getting the girl. Nice payoff after months of investment in this story. So this was actually one of the highlights. This was one of the highlights of WrestleMania here tonight. read off some more of these as we try to play catch up. Austin Sanders, if I didn't mention him, I'm mentioning him again. Thank you for the $5. We got a lot of new people subbing to the channel, too. I like to see that. Remember, when you do, hit that bell. Infamous GS, thank you for the super chat. Andrew Jorlog with the $30 drop. JB with the $1.99. Thank you. Lord Frieza, thank you for the super chat. Ash Dolan 16. Capitalist, sending in $5. John Falchetta with the $10 drop. And Darius Smith, also with the $5 drop. Says he loved the results of both shows with the exception of Becky against Shayna. Hopefully their feud resumes with, well, he called her Shauna. Her name is Shayna. Shauna Baszler. There might be a Shauna Baszler. I mean, I'm not saying there isn't. I don't think she works for WWE. But yes, hopefully Shayna Baszler is not completely out of the picture here on this show. Which brings us to the last man standing match between Edge and Randy Orton. This match might still be going on. I have to go back and check. It's very possible this match is still going on. I really wanted to like this match. I really did. I came in, you guys heard me. I said it last night when I was running down the card for night two. I said it last night. This was the best promoted match of all of the matches, all the big matches on the WrestleMania card. Edge and Randy Orton, from the moment Edge came back and the little interaction with him and Orton in the Rumble match, the angle the next night, the stuff with Beth Phoenix, the promo work back and forth, some of the empty arena promos, Edge, you know, in the last few weeks, just masterful. So I had high hopes for this match. I was really looking forward to this match. And they did brawl all over the PC. That was one of the things I was hoping we would see. Don't just keep it in the ring. Go out of the building. Go out into the street. Is there a bar? Well, I guess they can't go anywhere because everything's closed. Yeah, in case you would never know, in WWE world, in the WWE universe, life goes on like everything is all hunky-dory. Meanwhile, everything is closed because there's this plague going around, but you would never know. Vince McMahon, what plague? Come on, pal. Everybody's got to go to work. So they brawled all over the PC, and you know, that's cool, but I never thought it would end. The fucking match wouldn't end. This match went 35 minutes. 35 minutes this match went. This was a taped match. I don't know what day of the week last week they wrapped everything up and they did, you know, all of the editing and stuff. Of all the people who must have watched this match back, Vince McMahon, Kevin Dunn, whoever. Of all the people who were watching this match, how did they not watch this match back and realize that they needed to shave off a good 10 to 12 minutes? I am astonished that somebody actually watched this back and thought, hey, you know what? This thing is fine as is. We'll just leave it alone. This thing is perfectly fine as is. It didn't help that Tom Phillips and Byron Saxton were calling this thing like they were calling a funeral. These guys were, they were practically whispering on commentary. Why even have commentary? Why even have commentary for this at all? My grandmother has more life to her, and she's been dead for 20 years. Speaking of moments that deserved a live audience, Edge walks out first. This is his first singles match in 9 years. Yeah, I agree with Turtlehead in the chat. This match should have gone 9 minutes. This is his first singles match in 9 years. And he's got to walk out there to an audience of none. Again, I know it's what can be done, but it's too bad. It's a shame. Things like that in Drew's moment, they're never going to be able to get that back. You know, Edge only has one big return at WrestleMania. Drew McIntyre wins his WWE Championship for the first time only once. You can't redo those moments. You don't get a do-over. You don't get a second chance. Orton's music hits. Edge is waiting for him. He's looking at the aisleway. And Orton comes from out of nowhere, hits an RKO. Referee's asking Edge, are you good? You know, you want to start here? Edge says, yes. What a finish that would have been. Edge says, no, I give up. Count to 10. So he says, yes, I'm good. He rings the bell. Match begins. And Orton hits another RKO. Edge gets back up at the count of eight. Orton grabs a TV camera outside, whacks Edge in the head with it, sends him over the barricade, out to the floor. Edge makes it back up to his feet before the 10 count. So they brawl into the gym area of the Performance Center. So this is the area where Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa were brawling a few weeks ago, several weeks ago, on NXT. They were in the Fitness Center portion of the PC. They were brawling, and, you know, I think it was Gargano. I think maybe it was Ciampa who threw a weight and broke the mirror in there. So they tore the shit out of that place. So they're brawling in the gym area, and we have a moment, and I just want to put a screen cap up on the screen real quick. Once the super chat gets out of the way, thank you to G-Well, by the way. They're brawling in the gym area, and as you can see here, Randy Orton takes a piece of gym equipment and he wraps it around Edge's neck. And I watched this, and I know other people had the same thought that I did. I thought it was very strange watching Randy Orton basically trying to kill Edge by wrapping a piece of gym equipment around his neck 2 weeks after I just got done watching a documentary about the Benoit murders. Having just talked about this and having just watched that Dark Side of the Ring episode on Chris Benoit and the way he killed himself, I could not help but think of that. Now, I'm not offended. I just thought it was very strange. It was a very strange sight to see here during this match. So Orton was about to use one of the weight plates as a weapon. Edge kicked it back into his face. He knocks Orton out. Orton falls back. He's sitting in a chair. And Edge reaches up. He grabs onto the pull-up bars that you would see in the gym. He starts swaying back and forth. And with all of his momentum, he swings forward. He hits what I can only describe as a sitting splash to Orton in the chair. So they're brawling all over the backstage area. They brawl back into the ringside area for a little bit. And he throws Edge into the barricade, off this little platform onto the barricade. And, you know, he makes it back up by the 9 count. He drags Edge backstage. Now they're going down a hallway, slamming him into a wall. They end up in a conference room. Edge is slamming Orton on the table in the conference room. Edge puts him on the table. He hits an elbow drop. So they brawl back out into the hallway. Poor cameraman gets bowled over. I don't know if he got hit or if he got... I don't remember if he got run into or what happened, but the cameraman took a bump. So down goes the cameraman. There was a spot in the backstage area where Edge climbed onto a ladder, or he climbed a ladder onto this high platform. He hit a diving elbow down through Orton, laid out on a table. This dragged so much. It was just a lot of punch, kick, and just dead time. There was a lot of dead time. And obviously not having a crowd to play off of doesn't help. You know, that hurts. But there was just nothing going on in between all these counts. This is the last man standing match, right? So you got to count 1, 2, 3. And this was just constant over and over again, to the point where I was just looking at the clock saying, okay, I get the fucking point here. Can we please move things along? So there's a pickup truck in the back. And Randy Orton gives Edge a draping DDT onto the truck. Referee is counting. Edge gets up. Edge climbs up some boxes on top of this giant production truck in the back. And Randy Orton, he's in pain on the ground, but he's laughing at himself. He's amused by all this. And then eventually he follows Edge up. So now they're both on the roof of this long production truck. And Orton went for the punt kick. Edge caught him with a spear. And then both guys get up. He gives Edge an RKO. Edge gets up, barely made it back up at the count of 9.5. Orton grabs some chairs. And he brings them up to the top of the truck. And that was part of the problem also, I think, in this match, is the fact that, you know, a lot of times when they were using weapons in here, the time that it took them, because they were selling, right? So they're in this huge street fight in the back. And so they have to sell, and they're moaning. I mean, if you were a blind person, if you had no vision, all you could do is hear what was going on, because you couldn't hear the fucking announcers because they were just talking so low. All you would hear are the wrestlers going, just the constant moaning, and they're crawling on their hands and knees, and they, you know, taking their time to retrieve this weapon and that weapon. After a while, it gets fucking old. So Orton goes, he gets chairs, he brings them up to the top of the truck, and he hits him in the back with a chair. He's getting set up for a concerto. Okay, he's going to give him a concerto. Before he could do it, Edge gets back up. He puts Orton down with the head and arm choke. So he basically chokes out Randy Orton. I was a little worried that was going to be the finish. I said, you better not end this. About 40 minutes into this match, you better have a better finish than a fucking head and arm choke. So he puts Edge down, and the referee starts counting. And Edge goes ahead, and Edge goes, boy, the Lars Sullivan jokes are just lighting up in the chat. So Edge tells the referee, he tells him, he says, stop fucking counting. Drops an F-bomb. Stop fucking counting. And he takes the chair. He's crying. He's getting all emotional. He's standing over Randy. This guy, he's been beating his ass for the last 40 minutes. Now all of a sudden he's getting emotional. Oh my God. And he gives Randy Orton a concerto. And the referee counts. Randy Orton doesn't get up. Edge is the biggest babyface in the world because now this match has finally come to an end. The match is finally over. Thank God. I thought it would never end. These guys, they worked hard. I will give them credit. I don't want to shit on the effort that they put into this match. These guys were sweating like beasts. You watch these guys, they're sweating on each other. I mean, it's kind of gross, to be honest with you. But they were beating the hell out of each other. And Edge hung in there. You know, remember, this was his first singles match. So it's kind of impressive that Edge, he didn't look totally gassed. It's not an easy thing to come back after 9 years. And I know he's got a ring up in his house. He's been training with the Revival, so it's not like he hasn't gotten in the ring. But it's not easy. You know, when you haven't had a long singles match, a big WrestleMania match in almost a decade, and Edge looked great. You know, physically, I thought he looked fine, and he did just fine. But this went way too long. Way too long. With way too much dead time between all the punching and the kicking. You shave 12 minutes, 15 minutes off this match, and I don't think this match is nearly as disappointing as I felt that this match was. And if they had this match in front of a live crowd, you know, obviously there wouldn't have been as much backstage brawling in a stadium, so they would have had to do it in the aisle, in the crowd. But I think if they had this kind of match even in front of a live audience, in all honesty, I think it would have died a death. I really do. I don't think it would have been much different. I just don't think... I cannot understand how somebody did not watch this back last week and go, let's see what we can cut from this match. You know, movie directors do it all the time. They film too much material. They have a certain amount of time that their movie has to fit into, right? Has to be 90 minutes. It has to be 2 hours. Well, we have 2.5 hours of content. Well, unfortunately, that means some scenes end up on the cutting room floor. They had that ability here to cut from this match, tighten it up a little bit, and they didn't do it. And unfortunately, the match dragged, and it suffered because of it. I did not like this match. I did not like this match. Far, far too long. Far too long. Maybe he had Taco Bell for lunch. The way these guys were moaning out there. That'll be a drop. Let's do some super chats here as we try to play catch up, as we always are trying to play catch up. But that's a good thing. I'm not complaining. Darius Smith, thank you. AJ Grimaldo, I think AJ's been listening to me for about 10 or 11 years now. Erasmo Solis with the $20. He said, Edge and Orton went too long. Yeah, grass is green, the sky is blue. I'm very white. These are all very, very noticeable observations. Strong Phoenix, thank you for the super chat. Jacob Donnelly, CadBane619 with the $10. We've got, let's see here, Matt Ferguson with the $20. Born Sinner, talking about the Funhouse, which I'm going to get to. And Bryant Becerra. Serge Lamar, thank you very much. And Spanish Goddess, I guess not to be confused with Sammy Guevara. Although maybe Sammy Guevara is tuning into the stream. If so, say hello to Sammy. Hey, Sammy Guevara is a wrestling fan. He could be tuning in here. You never know. It's possible. Mojo Rawley. He was being chased around by a bunch of unnamed wrestlers. And they're all brawling below the perch in the PC. Gronk, he was standing on the perch, so of course, Gronk did a dive onto the pile, knocked everybody down, and Rob Gronkowski pinned Mojo Rawley to become the new WWE 24/7 champion, to which I say, who could possibly give a shit? The Street Profits took on Angel Garza and Austin Theory for the Raw Tag Team titles. Not much to it. You know, the best thing I could say, at least it was quick. Montez Ford, he tried that suicide dive spot out over the top rope again that he had tried on Raw last week. First time he tried it on Austin Theory, didn't catch him. And I laughed my ass off here because this time, Angelo Dawkins was there standing next to Austin Theory to catch Montez Ford. So they did not trust Austin Theory to catch this guy after what happened on Raw. So they made sure that Angelo Dawkins was there to catch his tag team partner and make sure that he did not break his neck or that he did not break his back. That was the first thing I noticed. There's Austin Theory, but there's Angelo Dawkins reaching up. He's reaching up, making sure that he can catch this guy. I thought that was funny. Austin Theory, he gave Angelo Dawkins a cutter, which I believe is his finish. I think he called, what was he called? The ATL or something, I think is what he calls it. Montez Ford, he came off the top rope right away with the frog splash, landed right on top of Theory. Angelo Dawkins drapes his arm over Austin Theory and gets the pin, so the Street Profits retain their tag team titles. Angel Garza, he attacks after the match. Theory attacks. Zelina Vega attacks. It's a gang attack. And out comes Bianca Belair. Bianca Belair comes out. She makes a beeline for Zelina Vega. She takes her out with a spear. She gives her the KOD, the kiss of death. Celebrates together with Angelo Dawkins and her husband. And so it looks like Bianca may now be on the main roster with the Street Profits. Which I think is kind of cool. You know, look, I said this a couple of years ago. Bianca Belair and Montez Ford, we know they're an item. We know they're, I think they're married. So we know they're together. And that doesn't mean that everybody who's married has to be on television together. But I just think Montez Ford and Bianca Belair one day are going to make an incredible heel couple. They'll probably make some incredible babies as well with the athletic genes that they have. They're both very athletic. They're very strong. They're very agile. I mean, these babies are going to be incredible. But I think as a heel couple on television, as heels, I think they're so charismatic and you know, they can handle their business in the ring. They're going to be a hot heel couple one day. Sorry to Angelo Dawkins. He doesn't factor into this thing. Titus O'Neil. Titus O'Neil was up on the perch, and he said that since Rob Gronkowski, I guess, is off celebrating his 24/7 title win, he has now taken over as the host of WrestleMania. So thank you for telling us. I guess that was very important for us to be aware of that. I'm not sure why. I'm not sure what the role of the host is other than to stand there and be obnoxious. So thank you to Titus for keeping us informed. KC from OC, thank you for the $35. Appreciate that. Jack Goodwillie. It's an interesting name. Goodwillie with the $10. Thank you. Longtime fan. Magician Sapphire, thank you for the super chat. Part of the party here. Tonight, on the live stream, the antagonist, in his Larry David voice, he says, tonight was what did he say here? Tonight was not a good. I'm lucky that WrestleMania 3 was my first live event. What was yours, he says. First live event in person, if that's what you mean. I was at a house show, it was Christmas. Day after Christmas, 1987 in Madison Square Garden. That was my first show. Macho Man Randy Savage in the main event challenging the Honky Tonk Man for the Intercontinental Championship with Jimmy Hart suspended above the ring in a shark cage. OG 85, thank you, Wavy Davy. Always good to hear from Wavy Davy. And Alex Matthews, there we go. That's the one that I missed earlier. I got to show some love to Alex Matthews. $75 super chat. Holy shit. It says, McIntyre and Jinder are WWE champions. Heath Slater is up next. Yeah, Heath Slater, he's the only one left. Heath Slater is the only member now of 3MB not to be WWE champion. Let's hope that it stays that way. Bayley, Sasha Banks, Lacey Evans, Naomi, and Tamina. Fatal 5-Way for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Sasha and Bayley, they worked together early on. They got knocked out of the ring at one point. Michael Cole was screaming. He said, Bayley and Sasha almost got eliminated at the same time. And then Bayley just grunts and says, no, we didn't. And I laughed because you could hear everything the announcers are saying out there because there's nobody in the building. So you can hear, even on the replays, you can hear Michael Cole screaming in the background. We got a brief Team Bad reunion with Sasha, Naomi, and Tamina. They did the fist bump and shouted, Unity! Is that what they say, right? Is that we got the high-pitched voice? Unity. Then Tamina kicks Sasha in the face. I have no memory of Tamina being a part of Team Bad. I'm sure she was. I'm not saying she wasn't. I remember Team Bad. I remember Sasha. I remember Naomi. I have absolutely no recollection of Tamina being part of that little faction. Maybe I've bleached it from my brain. So they all hit Tamina with their finishes. They all jumped on top of her and they covered her. And so Tamina was eliminated. Naomi now, she's beating the crap out of Bayley and Sasha. Bayley saved Sasha. Sasha was in a submission hold. She was very close to tapping out. Bayley made the save, which is kind of weird, right? Because Bayley is the champion. I mean, you could just let her tap out. You could say, oh, I couldn't make it in time. So Sasha hits the backstabber, locks in the bank statement. Naomi taps out. I guess the idea is that if she would have let her best friend be eliminated, she would have been outnumbered. So I guess that kind of does make sense. So poor Lacey Evans, she's left all by her lonesome. 2-on-1. Sasha and Bayley, they double-team her. Bayley went for a running knee. Lacey ducked, and she nailed Sasha as I choked to death here. Almost choked to death here on the air. My goodness. Mm-mm-mm. That would be very bad. Solid Monster croaks on night 2 of WrestleMania. So Bayley connects by accident with Sasha. And Bayley's out. She's out cold. And Sasha comes back inside. She yanks Bayley away. She's very upset. She goes, what are you doing? What was that for? Bayley's trying to explain herself. It was an accident. I didn't mean it. Let's talk about this after. And here comes Lacey Evans. Now in here, Bayley shoves Sasha out of the way. She did so to save her. But in doing so, Lacey Evans clocked Sasha with the woman's right, and she pinned her. So Sasha Banks was eliminated. And then one of the funnier moments of the match, Lacey went up to the top rope. And Lacey, you know, she does that springboard moonsault off the top rope, which actually looks great. She does a much better moonsault than Charlotte Flair does. So before she hits the moonsault, Lacey does the salute. She used to be in the Marines. Thought it was very patriotic of her before she hit the moonsault to do the salute. And she connected, but Bayley kicked out. So as they're fighting some more, Sasha comes back, gives Lacey a backstabber. Remember, there's no DQs in a fatal five-way. And Bayley then hits the headlock driver for the win. So Bayley retains her SmackDown Women's Championship. Sasha Banks grabs the belt. She's being very nice to Bayley. She grabs the title. She's going to strap it around her waist. She's got a kind of a devilish smile on her face. And Bayley is celebrating. I'm the best. She's talking shit up on the turnbuckles. But you could see the gears kind of going in Sasha's head. She's got other plans for Bayley. I thought this was a good match. I actually thought it was a fun match overall. I thought it was a fun match. Much better than Becky and Shayna from WrestleMania Night 1. And we got some nice storyline progression here with Sasha and Bayley. Clearly, they're slowly building to Bayley against Sasha. But I'm telling you, I think the money in the bank could end up playing a role in all of that. It's take a look at what we got going on here in the chat. Shouting out, everybody. We got over 3,000 people listening and watching live. Shout out to all 3,000 of you guys out there. Don't forget that if you want to get a message up on screen, Super Chats are open for those who are interested in doing so. For example, this gentleman right here, Andrew Kugel. Thank you for the earlier Super Chat. Please do your best, Mel Gibson, and shout freedom for Drew McIntyre. I don't think people want me to do that. I'm not going to do Braveheart here. I'm not going to go into my Braveheart speech. Zach Walker, thank you for the $10. I appreciate that. All the people subbing to the channel. Everybody hitting that sub button tonight. I love it. I love it. Hit that subscribe button. Prince Walker, thank you for the super chat. G-Well 66, I mentioned him before. Z-Bird 85 for the $10. Brian Pissera again with the WrestleMania 35 drop. Unbelievable. Eric Fisher, Strong Phoenix, Sean Waters, Prince Walker, the Chosen One. I feel like I'm on roll call here. Let me switch on over here to our phone number slot. We'll take calls here in a little bit, but we're not done yet. We got some more to go. In fact, we have now come to one of the more interesting parts of the stream, which is the Firefly Funhouse match between John Cena and The Fiend Bray Wyatt. And the words mindfuck come to mind when it comes to the Firefly Funhouse match that we got here on this show. I would say that mindfuck is probably a pretty good way to put what we saw here in this match. So John Cena makes his entrance, but he makes his entrance in the arena, so it looks as if they're going to have a regular match. Now, you know, I had read in advance, as many of you did, that they had given this match the movie treatment and they filmed it in a warehouse somewhere. So I kind of knew this has got to spill over into a different place at some point. But out comes John Cena to his music, and all of a sudden he's interrupted by a video of, you hear Vince McMahon, a compilation of Vince McMahon clips from over the years, telling everybody, welcome to WrestleMania. And we see all these clips, and John Cena all of a sudden ends up in the Firefly Funhouse. He's transported into the Firefly Funhouse. Now, this is after Bray popped up on screen first. Bray was in the Firefly Funhouse before Cena was. I got ahead of myself. I'm so excited here. I got too far ahead of myself. Bray Wyatt showed up in the Firefly Funhouse. And then he went and exited through the door. And he disappeared. So then John Cena is standing in the Firefly Funhouse. He's teleported there. And we see Ramblin' Rabbit pop up. Hey, dude. Ramblin' Rabbit pops up. He tells John Cena that Bray went through the door. Says, go that way. He went through the door. So John Cena opens the door, and all of a sudden he's in a dark place. He's in a very dark place. And sidling up to him is the Vince McMahon puppet. Puppet Vince sidles up to John Cena, and he warns John Cena. He's talking about ruthless aggression. You need to have ruthless aggression to stay in WWE. And then we see Bray airing a clip of Kurt Angle challenging somebody to come on out. Remember the Kurt Angle Open Challenge back in 2002? And we see images of Bray standing in the ring. So basically, Bray is reenacting John Cena's debut segment. He is playing the role of Kurt Angle. He's standing in this darkened place in the middle of a ring. And all of a sudden, in the present day, we see John Cena. But more importantly than seeing John Cena, we saw something else. We saw something else that was incredible. We saw the SmackDown Fist. Everybody, when they heard that SmackDown was going to Fox and that they were going to have a new set and everything, and the new set looks nice. I'm sure they spent a lot of money on it. But a lot of people were very disappointed because they thought that we were going to get the Fist. Everybody loves the Fist, right? Everybody wanted to get fisted when SmackDown came back to Fox, and we didn't get the Fist. So they were very upset. Well, guess what? We got the Fist here at WrestleMania. This giant fist is just sitting right behind John Cena. And we see John Cena walk out, and John Cena is wearing what appears to be the same gear that he debuted in when he walked out there in 2002. Either it was the actual gear or it was a reasonable facsimile, but we got to see a rare sight. John Cena wearing tights. John Cena wearing ring trunks. I guess tights and trunks are two different things. I guess they would be trunks. He was wearing wrestling boots and not sneakers. It was very weird to see John Cena with hair wearing actual wrestling gear. But he's playing along. It's almost as if John Cena was in the middle of a bad dream. You know, when you're in a dream, sometimes you know that it's a dream, but a lot of times you don't. It kind of felt here like John Cena just didn't realize that he was in a dream. You really got to suspend your disbelief. There's going to be a lot of people who hate this fucking match with every fiber of their being. Hate this match as much as they hated the Boneyard match last night. Well, I got news for you. This was great. I don't know what the fuck this was, but I was loving every second of it. This wasn't even the best part. We didn't even get to the best part yet. That was coming up next. That was yet to come. So, John Cena, he gets in the ring, and Bray is telling Cena that his greatest failure, you know, this is Cena's greatest failure, was, I guess, his loss to Kurt Angle. Cena's taking swipes at Bray. He can't connect. Bray is just ducking each one. All of a sudden, Bray starts singing Nikki Bella's theme song, You Can Look, But You Can't Touch. At least they didn't sing Brie Mode, thank fucking Christ. So here's the best part of the whole thing. Ready for this? And if you are a new wrestling fan, you will not understand this, but if you are a wrestling fan who grew up in the 1980s, if you are a wrestling fan who grew up in the age of Saturday Night's Main Event and Hulk Hogan and Hulkamania and the Macho Man and all that kind of stuff, then you loved this part, I'm sure, as much as I did. They licensed the song Obsession by Animotion, the original theme song for Saturday Night's Main Event. And they started playing the original, or one of the original intros to Saturday Night's Main Event from 1985. And I said to myself, I wrote one line in my notes. I said, this is already the greatest wrestling match, or the greatest match in WrestleMania history. My face that you see on the screen there, I had that stupid look on my face as I was watching this. I was loving every second of this. Animotion. Obsession. Amazing. So then we cut to a totally different scene. We see Bray Wyatt. I guess he's supposed to be Hulk Hogan. He's standing behind the old blue bar cage. Obviously, they must have filmed this whole thing in the WWE warehouse. The WWE warehouse in Connecticut is gigantic. It is absolutely gigantic. And they have the fist, and they have the old cages, and they have old rings, and all of the old props. Objects that guys would bring down to the ring, Papa Shango's old voodoo stick, like all of that stuff, all the urns and the broken caskets and all that stuff, probably the burned out DX Express. It's all in this giant warehouse, the old championship belts. I would not be surprised to learn that they filmed this, or at least part of this, in the warehouse. So he's standing there, the cage is in front of him, behind him is this giant Saturday Night's Main Event banner. And in walks John Cena, ripped to shreds. He's pumping iron. He's doing dumbbell curls. I guess he's supposed to be the Macho Man to Bray's Hogan, I guess. They're cutting an 80s-style promo. I'm in heaven right now. When he's done, though, when he's done working out, John Cena can't move his arms. He's, like, flailing his arms. I guess he worked out too much, I guess. He can't move his arms. And Bray has a great line here. He says, he looks at Cena and he goes, "Egomania is running wild." So then we transport back to a different scene. John Cena winds up back in the arena in front of the fist. This time he's dressed as the Doctor of Thugonomics. And they get to the ring, and Bray's in the ring, and Cena's in the ring, and he starts rapping, and he's rapping to crickets. Nobody is laughing because nobody's there. And then they played actual crickets. He cracks a Husky Harris joke. Cena looks at Bray and he goes, "You're a slut for opportunity. You're blowing every chance." And Bray gets very serious, very solemn. He says, "How dare you talk to me about chances, John Cena?" He says, "You're the golden goose. You're untouchable. But you're no hero. You're a bully. You are a horrible person." And Cena comes at him, but Bray teleports behind him and... what'd he hit him with? I think he hit him with brass knucks or something. Was it brass knucks or a belt? I don't know. He had something in his hand. I think it might have been brass knucks. And he hits Cena with it. So then we cut to a different scene. Just, I felt like I was on drugs watching this match. I've not taken drugs, but I would imagine that it's probably somewhat like this experience. I guess depending on which drug you take. So we get a shot of the old Bray Wyatt, the original Wyatt family cult leader Bray Wyatt in his rocking chair up in the forest somewhere. And he starts talking about, you know, the WrestleMania 30 match. He's talking to, they needed me, John. They wanted me. They're showing clips from the WrestleMania 30 match. Was it a chain? Okay, people in the, it might have been seen as chain maybe. So he hit him with a chain. Thank you. Love this instant reaction here. People can correct my mistakes in real time. So he's talking about the WrestleMania 30 match. He's showing clips from WrestleMania 30. And he's talking about his loss, basically saying, look, I was supposed to win. People wanted me to win. I was supposed to win. It's all your fault that I didn't win. You ruined it, John Cena. We cut back to the ring. The rocking chair is suddenly in the ring. Now, Bray ends up on his knees. Not in a sexual way, but he ends up on his knees. Cena has a chair in his hand. And he tells Cena to do what he could not do at WrestleMania 30. I guess at WrestleMania 30, John Cena had the chance to hit Bray. Bray got down on his knees, put his arms out, and said, do it. And Cena wouldn't hit him with the chair 6 years ago at WrestleMania 30. He says, now's your chance. Do it now. And this time, Cena took a swing, but when he did it, there's nobody there. Then things got really weird. As if everything up to this point wasn't weird, right? I love how I say that, by the way. It's like, oh, now things are getting weird. As if everything I just got done talking about for the last 10 minutes wasn't fucking weird enough. They got even weirder because now we see the old intro to NWO Nitro, the very limited run of NWO Nitro, which did not do very well, which is why NWO Nitro was very short-lived. Didn't do very well. But we see NWO Nitro. And we see a shot of Bray Wyatt in the ring wearing an NWO Red Wolfpack shirt. I guess he's supposed to be Eric Bischoff. They have clips of Bischoff spliced in there. And he introduces us to John Cena. And out walks John Cena with the championship. He's got a white and black NWO shirt on. It's like some kind of alternate timeline where if history had just been adjusted ever so slightly, like WCW would have won the war. And John Cena would have been a member of the NWO wrestling on NWO Nitro. Although I don't know how that timeline really syncs up because John Cena didn't debut until after WCW was already dead. So I'm not quite sure what any of this part meant, but I'm sure somebody will explain it to me. But he introduces Cena, out comes Cena. And as all of this is going on, they cut to Puppet Vince, who is doing commentary. And Puppet Vince just goes, it's such good shit. They didn't bleep it or anything. Just, it's such good shit. Which, you know, I think I play that in my, I used to play that in the intro to my podcast. So, Cena, I can't even believe what, I don't even know what I'm talking about here. It's just like, this whole thing is just completely just, it's all nonsense. But I loved it. I couldn't take my eyes off what I was watching. So I guess it achieved whatever weird goal that it had. Whoever put this together, I don't know what they took the night before. I'm sure Bray had a lot of creative input into this, and he's a very creative guy. But whoever helped put this whole thing together, boy, I want to be on whatever they were on. I'm stuck here at home. I'm on quarantine. I can't go anywhere. I want to try what these guys were trying. See what kind of fucked up dreams I could have. I'm going to need content for the podcast soon if everything gets shut down. I can have a new story every week about some whacked out wrestling dream. So Cena is in the ring in his NWO shirt, and he goes to attack Bray. He gets Bray down on the mat, and we don't see Bray, but we have an image of Cena. He is beating the fuck out of this guy. He is raining blows down upon the Fiend. Or I guess it wasn't the Fiend, it was Bray Wyatt. But then he looks and he realizes he's not beating up Bray Wyatt, he's beating up Huskus. He's beating up Huskus the pig. Now, Huskus the pig represents the old version of Bray Wyatt. Suddenly, we see the Fiend appearing behind Cena, and he has his hurt glove and his heel glove. He decides to use the hurt glove to apply the mandible claw, hits Sister Abigail, puts the claw on again. We then see Mr. Rogers Wyatt. He counts the three. And the Fiend stands tall. John Cena disappears. I don't know where he went. In the final shot, we see the Fiend standing in the ring. He says, "Let me in." They cut back to the arena. And we see Titus O'Neil, who is very much regretting at this point the fact that he stepped in as the new host of WrestleMania. He has this stunned expression on his face. He has no idea what to say. And then they just cut to commercial. Well, look. Now I know what it's like to drop acid. So what did I think of this match? I was very entertained by this match. Half of what happened, I don't have any idea. Like, the NWO stuff, I don't get. I'm sure, like I said, somebody will explain it to me, I'm sure. I think I understood most of what was going on here, and that's part of what I liked about the match. You know, they tied it into the original match 6 years ago. And so there were, you know, they were telling a story here. It wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just a case of they're just throwing shit at the wall and nothing means anything. You know, I trust, you know, a lot of the stuff that Wyatt does, he comes up with a lot of his own stuff. There's a meaning to it. It's not always apparent what that meaning is, but it has some meaning to it. So they were threading this story during the match. I could appreciate that. I loved the Boneyard match from night one. And a lot of people didn't. A lot of people did, but a lot of people didn't. There was a lot of divided opinion. I think more positive than negative, but there was a lot of negative opinion about the Boneyard match. Not everybody enjoyed that. I like the Boneyard match. I like this match. I like the Boneyard match more. I like the Boneyard match more. This was just... if you had the wildest, most fucked up wrestling dream that you could think of, where nothing makes sense, yet everything makes sense. That's what this was. So, not as good as the Boneyard match. Of the two cinematic movies they put together, I thought that was the better of the two. But I was entertained by this. And the Saturday Night's Main Event, Obsession stuff, all that, you know, Vince McMahon, Puppet Vince. To me, those were the highlights of the match. So, look, I can't say a bad word about it. You knew going in that this thing was not going to be something that wrestling purists were going to like. You knew exactly what this was going to be coming into it. It's Bray Wyatt. It's the Funhouse. I mean, what did you expect this to be? Something you would see in Bill Watts and the UWF back in the day? No. No, this is not the kind of match you would see in the NWA back in the 80s. You knew what this was going to be. You either accept it or you just hated it. You either just had this preconceived notion of what you thought it was going to be, and you just hated it going into it. I kept an open mind. I was entertained. But it was not as good as what Undertaker and AJ Styles had put together in the main event the night before. I can't say that I liked this or that this was better. But Bray Wyatt kind of sort of gets his win back over John Cena. At least he didn't lose, right? So I guess that's a good thing. I was a little worried that they were going to put Cena over, but... they did the right thing, and the Fiend stands tall. If I had one regret about the way they ended this, I kind of wish that it would have ended with Cena being turned into a puppet in the Funhouse, and now he's kind of stuck there, and he doesn't know how to get out. And from now on, when they do the Firefly Funhouse on TV, we see, you know, we see Ramblin' Rabbit, we see Mercy the Buzzard and all the puppets, and then there's Puppet Cena. That's what I would have done, but otherwise... this was quite the mindfuck. This was quite the mindfuck. Emmanuel, thank you for the super chat. Said the chicken sandwich that my girlfriend made me was better than WrestleMania. I believe it. Chicken sandwiches are the shit. Matthew Rice, thank you for the $20. John Falchetta with the $2 drop. Michael Dunn, DC, with the $10 super chat. Gavin Amy, thank you. LSF45, Joe Olivo has a buy or sell. Which is worse, Seth against the Fiend Hell in a Cell or John Cena against the Fiend Firefly Funhouse Mania? Oh my God, are you kidding me? Seth Rollins and the Fiend, that was fucking terrible. There was absolutely nothing entertaining about that. Not one shred of any redeeming value to that Hell in a Cell match last October. I will buy all day long on the Funhouse match that we got tonight at WrestleMania over that match. Dre Horizon says he popped for the entire Saturday night's main event segment. Attention fan, thank you. David Solis, mundane wrestling butthole. Jesus. What the fuck? Mundane wrestling butthole. Said Charlotte Flair should win the WWE Championship in 2021. Hey, we may get a WWE title match one day with Charlotte Flair and Tessa Blanchard. Don't think that might not happen one day. Mo Guns Jackson, thank you for the super chat. And NWO Hollywood, a lot of NWO representation on WrestleMania tonight. So then we got the main event. Brock Lesnar. Let's get down to brass tacks here. Brock Lesnar and Drew McIntyre for the WWE Championship. This was Drew's big moment. He's waited his entire career for this. The Royal Rumble. He kicked Brock Lesnar out of the ring. Minute Maid Park exploded. He got this tremendous reaction. And then he won the Royal Rumble, and you thought, this guy's going to finally get his WrestleMania moment. He's going to get his crowning moment in front of 70,000 people. And then the world went to shit. And Drew McIntyre, he gets his WrestleMania moment with the least amount of fanfare that any WWE title change has ever had, probably in the history of the company. Match starts. Brock hits a bunch of shoulder tackles in the corner. Right out of the gate, though, right after that, Drew hits a Claymore kick. Goes for the pin, and Brock kicks out. Lesnar ducks another Claymore. I think he went. Did he go for the pin? I thought he went for the pin. I have in my notes that he went for the pin. So he goes for another one, and Lesnar ducks it, hits a German suplex, hits another German suplex, hits another German suplex. You know the drill. It's a Brock Lesnar match. It ain't hard to figure out. He hits an F5, and Drew McIntyre kicks out at one. He does the strong style Japanese kick out at one. Hits a second F5. Hits another F5 after that. Both times, McIntyre kicks out. He is no-selling the F5. Not no-selling it, but, you know, they haven't really had anybody else kick out of multiple F5s. The only other person, Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns kicked out of either five or six F5s at WrestleMania 34, and then he got beat. I think the sixth one did him in. So he kicked out of a whole bunch of F5s. Lesnar went for another one. McIntyre shoves him into the ropes. Hits a Claymore kick. Heyman is screaming. He's getting ready. He's going to do another one. And he ends up hitting a third Claymore and a fourth Claymore kick to win the WWE Championship. And just like that, Drew McIntyre wins his first WWE title. No pyro. No big fan celebration. His family isn't there because, you know, you can't have anybody there really at all. And I did feel bad for him. You could see it meant something to him. He was getting emotional. He was posing with the championship. Because think about what this guy has been through. He was in the company. He comes into the company a decade ago. Over a decade ago. He's the chosen one. Right? They're going to strap the rocket to this guy. And they're going to vault him into the stratosphere. Everything just turns to shit for this guy. He ends up as a joke. He's booked in three-man band Wrestling Hornswoggle. WLC. Which actually is a great match, I have to say. But then he gets fired. Treated like a joke and then kicked to the curb. So he fights his way back. You know, he gets himself into the best shape of his life. He's lighting it up on the independents, Evolve, all these different places overseas in the UK. He was in Impact for a while. He gets WWE's attention and they sign him. They bring him into NXT. Becomes the NXT champion. He gets hurt, comes back. He's a heel for a while. And now, finally, he's getting over as a babyface. This has been years in the making for this guy. And for him to finally get his moment under these conditions and under these circumstances is bullshit. And I do feel bad that this is always going to be his first moment becoming the champion. And who knows? Who knows if he'll ever have another WrestleMania main event again? We don't know. He's not Roman Reigns. He's not Brock Lesnar. If Vince McMahon gets bored of him in a year or two, he could be back in the mid-card. So, he's the champion now. Where we go from here is anyone's guess, because a lot of it depends on whether or not this company is going to continue to do shows. We still don't know. We don't know what their plans are. I'm hearing now that they're going to try to tape, possibly, you know, SmackDown on Friday, try to do it from an undisclosed location. in a state that is on lockdown, but not tell anybody. I don't know how that's going to work out. I mean, for God's sakes, just shut it down at that point. If you've got to start filming in secret locations in places where you're not supposed to be filming, just stop. Just stop. You just had WrestleMania. You've already taped the Raw after WrestleMania. Tomorrow night's show's already taped. NXT on Wednesday is already taped. From SmackDown on Friday onward, we have no idea what their plans are. If ever there was a time to just shut things down for a while and have a little off-season, it would be right after WrestleMania. WrestleMania is the climax of your year. So if ever there was a time for them to do it, now is the time. But they, you know, announced Money in the Bank for May 10th, and they're apparently going to try to soldier on if they can and keep going. All right, well, I hope that, I hope nobody gets sick, you know. That's all I can say. I hope everybody is on board and nobody feels as if they're being forced into a situation they don't want to be in. And hopefully nobody gets sick and everybody stays healthy. Because the minute that somebody gets sick with this thing, that's it. It's over. It's over. And I don't want to see that happen. So, it's not worth it. It's pro wrestling. You're rolling around in your underwear. At the end of the day, you know, when we're talking about people's health and we're talking about people's lives, it ain't worth it. It really ain't worth it. Magician Sapphire, thank you. B, 514 Trader, thank you for the super chat. Tyler Williams with the $5 felt that the match was overproduced, but did not really come close to the Boneyard match. I agree. Andrew Kugel, buy or sell, Hall and Nash. Or Hall and Oates. Oh, Hall and Oates. Absolutely. Buy on Hall and Oates. Kevin, oh my God. Which did you enjoy more, night one or night two? I give the slight edge to night one. I think I said last night, 6.5 I'd be willing to go. Tonight I would be willing to go in the 5 range. I'd say 5, maybe 5.5. I can't go higher than that. This you know, there were matches that I enjoyed, but this was not WrestleMania. This was not WrestleMania. So I can't really go higher than that. Cack Burlington, thank you. Paul Heyman has subscribed to your channel. Well, how about that? How about that? Paul Heyman, welcome to the Sound Off channel. Ray Ray, thank you for the $13. Scorpio Sky's well-trimmed beard with the $5. Always love hearing from Scorpio Sky's well-trimmed beard. It's always a good time. So why don't we dive into some other opinions here. This is always one of the more interesting parts of the show. We'll take a few before we wrap things up here as we are rocking and rolling. We still got a lot of action going on in the chat. You'll love to see it. As we barrel towards midnight on Monday, let us go to the Lone Star State. We'll start off with Christian.
Hey, Joel Monster, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Christian. How are you doing on this WrestleMania Sunday?
Pretty good early birthday present, that's for sure. Hey, I wanted to talk about the Firefly Funhouse.
Of course you do. Of course. I think everybody's going to want to talk about that.
Yeah. You were talking about the whole, you know, WCW scenario.
Right.
I think, and here's what I think. And Monday Nitro wins the war, the whole entire war, and John Cena comes in. And Eric's like, hey, there's a new guy coming in. This John Cena guy. Let's make him part of the NWO member. Hogan, let's make him part of the Black and White member. How about that? We do that. What do you think?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I still don't understand what they were going for. I don't think that was it. I think you might be on the right track with it. It's possible, but I don't know that that was necessarily it. But we'll see. You know, we'll see. Again, I'm sure people are going to be chiming in. I got to let you go because I want to move along here. But maybe somebody will chime in and fill me in on what I'm missing with all the NWO stuff. I got everything else pretty much in the match. You know, and a lot of it tied back to the loss of WrestleMania 30. But I'm sure there must be a reason for what we saw there. Let's keep it down in Texas, I think, and go to Joseph.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I think part two was pretty good. Part one, I like part one, and I love the Boneyard match to death. The only thing I hate was, what was that music playing when Undertaker came on the bike?
Oh,
was that Metallica?
Yeah, it was Metallica. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. If it's not Kid Rock or Limp Bizkit, I mean, that's the only complaint I have about that match.
Well, if that's the only complaint you got, but if that's the only complaint you got about that match, then that's pretty good. I mean, that's actually a pretty good match then, if you don't have anything else to complain about.
Oh yeah, no, the match was awesome. I've loved American Badass since it first came out. I mean, I didn't even know people hated it until I listened to your podcast and I found out people hated it back then.
But they hate Nickelback. They hate Nickelback. I know that. I've been told that anything Nickelback is apparently, it's off limits. But Kid Rock is okay.
Yeah, I got you. Well, I'm going to just make this really quick, so, because I know you got other people to get to. So, yes, I mean, it was a good show. But one thing I saw, Shayna Baszler lost, Rhea Ripley lost, and I saw Austin Theory. I mean, I figured he was going to lose because he's new. But they're NXT guys, and again, it's the same formula. NXT guys, they're always losing to the main roster. I mean, they build these people up. They get these names, and then they just lose. And, you know, I just wanted to get your opinion on that. Not to say they're buried or anything, because I don't like using that word either. But my thing is this. I've seen this thing go on for years. Every time there's a big NXT star, just to name a few, Ricochet, EC3, oh, my God, they should be in jail for how they treat that guy. Do you think it's just the fact, not that Vince doesn't get it, but do you think Vince is just upset that these guys get over on their own and he doesn't create any of them, and so he takes it out on them?
I think that that's the case with some people, but the guys you just mentioned, Ricochet and that, you know, I mean, no, it's just I would imagine that he just gets bored with them. Otherwise, he'd be pushing them as big stars. The fact that he's not doing it obviously means that he doesn't see either top superstar potential in them, or he just, it's like play toys. He gets bored, he wants to move on to the next one. That's pretty much what I think is going on here. Let's go to, boy, we have a lot of Texas callers tonight. We got a lot of action coming out of Texas. Let's do one more. We'll go to one more from Texas, that is. JP.
Hey, fellow monster. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, I'm actually not going to talk about the Funhouse.
okay.
It actually pertains to both of the type of the world title matches. You know, I was at the Royal Rumble when Drew won the big thing, and, you know, the crowd, they went nuts for it. And, you know, last night with Goldberg and Strowman, I get it. Those two guys are limited, especially Goldberg, you know. I really, really thought that they were going to somehow edit it to where Goldberg would hit a jackhammer. I know that sounds crazy, but, you know, but all the time they had to edit and slide.
Well, how would you do that, though? Wait, hold on a second. So the idea would be that in post-production, they would find a way to make it look like Goldberg gave him the jackhammer.
No. Like, because of the fact that they were, you know, there was no rush to get through the match. You know, hey, try it, see if you can get him up there.
Well, maybe they did. Maybe they did. And maybe they did and he just couldn't do it.
Yeah, maybe they did. Yeah. I mean, that's possible. But I just figured, you know, if they tried a couple times, maybe he could do it, you know, and just keep trying until they get it. But maybe it didn't happen. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
I love the idea, though. But I love the idea, now that I said that out loud, I love the idea that maybe they, like a puppeteer, where they had Goldberg lift up Braun, and they had Braun's legs like basically being held up from the ceiling to make it look like Goldberg was holding. That actually would have been kind of funny, but yeah, I guess that would
have been a moment. You know, at the end of the day, that'd have been a pretty neat moment to see if they could have pulled it off, you know?
Sure.
You know, hold him up there for 3 seconds like the old days, but anyway, sure. Off topic. Short match, I get it. With Drew, you know, yeah, like you said, it sucks for things turning out the way that it did. But when I watched that match tonight, man, I texted my cousin. I was like, dude, this match infuriates me. Because Drew is good in the ring. And despite how they push Brock as a two-move guy, Brock is good in the ring. And they treated those guys like they're just barely a notch above Goldberg and Strowman, and that instead of getting a hard-hitting 15-minute good match, man, we just got this bullshit, what, 3-4 minutes? And those two guys could have done so much more. And I just feel, you know, Drew especially was already getting screwed over as it was. But that for the show to end the way that it did, it just felt like a throwaway. And that was really disappointing, I thought.
It was very anticlimactic, I think is a good way to put it. You know, it's just not what you would expect from a main event at WrestleMania, because normally you would expect the big celebration. And we didn't get that. And it just felt very underwhelming. So I'm sure you and a lot of other people feel the same way. I feel the same way. I feel the same way that you do. So it's very underwhelming. They insisted on moving ahead with this card. They wanted to do WrestleMania, right? That was the Vince McMahon call. We've got to put a show on for everybody. We've got to move ahead. We've got to get WrestleMania in. And one of the consequences of that is it's WrestleMania in name only, because now you've put the show on and it has absolutely none of the attributes that make WrestleMania what it is. So when you get criticism from people saying, well, it just didn't feel like a WrestleMania, it didn't feel like a big show, you can't then turn around and say, well, you can't complain because we gave you a show and everything going on in the world, our job was just to take your attention away from that. No, I appreciate that, and you're right. There's a lot of bad shit going on in the world, and for a few hours, my attention was taken off of it. But don't hide behind that as an excuse. You're not doing me any favors. If I wasn't watching WrestleMania tonight, guess what? I'd be watching Netflix, and I'd be taking my mind off it by watching Ozark or by watching House of Cards, or by watching the Big Show, which I'm going to actually try to watch this week. I'd be doing something else to take my mind. I don't need you to help take my mind off things. I appreciate that. But they wanted to do WrestleMania selfishly because Vince McMahon just felt we got to get WrestleMania in. And maybe there were other people in the company who agreed and who felt the same way. And I know for a fact, you know, because there are people who probably would have preferred to be at home with their families. And not traveling and not having to, you know, work in the middle of everything that's been going on. So they chose to move ahead with the show, and you got to accept the criticism that people are going to have. You know, they have certain expectations for WrestleMania. A lot of those expectations were not met. And so that's criticism that I think is absolutely fair. I don't want to hear from people who say there should be no negativity. There should be no negativity. Who knows how long this is going to go on for? Who knows how long this is going to go on for? Does that give them just blanket immunity if they continue to do TV? Well, we ought to just button up and not say anything because they're putting on a show for us. Boy, that's awfully ungrateful if you complain. No, I judge the shows like I judge the shows any other week. I know the difference between good television and bad television. I'm not going to grade them on a curve if they insist on doing these shows, just like AEW. If AEW is going to put Dynamite on TV every week, I'm not going to go on there if I see something I happen to not like, which does happen occasionally, and not talk about that because, oh, well, you know, they're giving us a show. I have to show my appreciation. Now I'm going to judge the show the way I would judge any other television show. I don't need people telling me what to do. I don't need people telling me, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. Fuck that and fuck you. I'm going to do and say whatever the hell I want. I see all these messages. You can't complain. No negativity. Fuck that. Fuck that. I don't want to hear it. People have a right to complain if they had certain expectations that were not met. That's just the way it goes. Tough shit. So I can't fault anybody who has an issue with these shows, who didn't like these shows. You're entitled to your opinion just like anybody else. I didn't hate these shows. I thought this was a middle-of-the-road WrestleMania. I've seen worse. WrestleMania 9. Was worse. WrestleMania 11 was worse. I'd say WrestleMania 13, but I mean, WrestleMania 13 had one of the greatest matches in company history. So it's kind of hard to crap too hard on WrestleMania 13. Now you got me all hot and bothered now. Let's take another call. Let's go to, I believe this might be our old friend Chad from last night.
Well, let me tell you something, brother. I told that to Brody my name was Terry, dude. But I want to give you a scoop, man. And the scoop is I challenged John Cena to WrestleMania, brother. He was ducking me. He was scared to death. And he put on the black and white colors tonight, dude. just because he didn't want none of Hollywood.
Well, there you have it, Hollywood Hogan. He's a little hot and bothered by what he saw tonight in the Firefly Funhouse match. Now, do you have an explanation for what we saw with the NWO stuff? What am I missing here?
Well, what you're missing is this one thing, dude.
Oh,
and that is,
sakes.
Like I said, I challenged John Cena to a match. He was ducking me, so he tried to get in my good graces by coming out to my music, playing my belt like a guitar dude, and he was scared to death. He didn't want none of Hollywood. But I got one question for you, Salamonster. I heard you said you didn't like WrestleMania 9, and I'm pretty sure it had nothing to do with what happened at the end. Right, brother?
Well, actually, WrestleMania 9, I think one of my favorite parts of WrestleMania 9 were the women who came out to be part of Lex Luger's entrance. I was very much intrigued in seeing the women in their outfits surrounding the ring as Lex Luger posed at the beginning of his match.
Are you talking about Lexi, the same jabroni, the same meatball I beat up in?
I am. Oh, my finger slipped. I'm sorry, Hulkster. I'm sorry. God, you know, I hate when that happens, man. My finger slipped. My finger just has a mind of its own. What can I say? Try calling back, brother. Let's go to Ohio. I believe we have Travis on the line.
How are you doing, Salamonster?
I'm doing well, dude. Brother Jack, dude, what's going on?
First off, about the Firefly Funhouse.
Sure.
I really do think that with stuff like that, I think that Lucha Underground, rest its soul, I think it's going to be in a different way remembered with having a lasting impact similar to ECW did, but like I said, very different ways, like with these Hollywood cinematic type of matches, like the Boneyard match, like this match. But I was very entertained, much like the Broken Universe stuff. Now, my question for you, Salamonster, pertains to Braun Strowman winning the title last night. Now, Drew McIntyre was a foregone conclusion as winning the Raw title, as we all are certain. Braun, on the other hand, was just thrusted into this match after losing the Intercontinental title a month ago. He didn't even have a match. Although, if we were in a stadium, I have a feeling he would have been in the Battle Royal this year, like last year.
Oh, wow.
But where do you...
What a great spot. What a great spot for him to have been in the Battle Royal. That tells you something right there, that the guy they put the championship on, you're probably right. He probably would have been in the Battle Royal, and now he gets to win the Universal Championship. Right place, right time. Braun Strowman is the perfect example of right place, right time. But go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that. Whenever this all goes back to normal and Roman Reigns comes back and inevitably reclaims his throne, as we're all certain is going to happen, do you think that Braun is still going to be at the same level, or do you see him trotting back down to the mid-card whenever he drops the belt to whoever? And do you think we get Goldberg versus Roman maybe at SummerSlam or something?
No, there's no point. I mean, there's no point in doing it now. The whole point was you were going to – I know the Battle of the Spears and all that kind of stuff, but the whole point was you were going to do the match – and it was going to be contested for the championship. I mean, it's not like I was clamoring to see this match before. So I could do without ever seeing the match, personally. But the whole point was, Roman was going to try to take the championship from him. Now you've taken the championship out of the equation. So I don't see any purpose in doing it. Now, as far as... And by the way, I wouldn't do it for another reason. Paul Heyman supposedly looks at Goldberg as being... I think it was a Meltzer or somebody... said that, you know, Heyman sees Goldberg as sort of his Bruno Sammartino. He's that legend that he can trot out and use whenever he needs him. And, okay, I can see that. You know, Goldberg is brought in for a big match here and there, Saudi Arabia, whatever. If they ever go back to Saudi Arabia at this point. But now he's lost, right? He's lost before, but he just lost a match. Are you really going to bring back Goldberg in 6 months or 9 months and beat him again? He just lost in 2 minutes. 2 minutes and 10 seconds. To Braun Strowman. Explain to me why I'm supposed to be excited or interested now in seeing him come back and challenge Roman Reigns. Why? Why would I give a shit? He lost. He lost in 2 minutes. He's not the champion anymore. I have no interest. I have no interest in seeing that match. As far as Braun Strowman is concerned, When he loses the championship, it's bye-bye Braun. He's going to go right back to where he was before. Right place, right time. That's all this is. So when the day comes that he drops the championship to Roman, and I'm sure he will, that's going to be it, I think, for Braun. As far, I don't see Braun being the kind of guy who's going to, you know, win the championship 3, 4, 5 times. He couldn't win it once to save his life when it counted. And he only has it now due to extenuating circumstances. So if they can't take this guy seriously, I'm not sure why I would. I certainly don't see his run in the main event lasting very long once he drops the championship. But he's big, right? He's a big guy. So he's always going to get the chance. He's always going to be in the mix. He'll always be there. Vince needs him. Let's go to John. If this works. There we go. I try to hit the button. It doesn't work. All right, John.
Hey, Salamanca.
John.
How you doing?
I'm good, John. How you doing?
Good. Just need your opinion on two quick questions.
Sure.
One, do you think they should have went with the Fiend versus Cena versus Goldberg for the title with the Fiend going over? And second quick question, the person in the hood who's running the Truth TV with the Mandy Rose angle, could you think eventually it could be CM Punk?
No. CM Punk? Why would it be CM Punk?
Well, it would be a big swerve. I know there's a lot of rumors that Vince doesn't want to do business, but what a great way to keep it secret. He does all these pipe bombs and...
It would definitely be a swerve. Why don't you just make it the Tiger King? You know? I mean, you could put anybody in there, right? I mean, you could put O.J. Simpson in there. You could put... I just got done talking about New Jack. The life and crimes of New Jack on the podcast earlier. It's going to be hitting this channel. That segment is going to be hitting this channel 40 minutes worth, probably tomorrow. Just make a New Jack. I mean, you can make it anybody. I don't really see the purpose. I mean, I get what you're saying, but no, CM Punk is not going to be. And I that would not be the way that I would imagine. CM Punk has been gone for what, 6 years? 6, 7 years now. CM Punk returns to WWE as this masked hacker who is... You know, terrorizing Dolph Ziggler and Sonya Deville. I mean, I think we could do better than that. Your first question, I don't remember. I'm so blown away by the second one. But yeah, no, it will not be CM Punk. Wow. Let's go to Eric.
Hi, greetings from Bakersfield, California, home of the Green Farm Market. Yeah, almost twisted my tongue there. So I just had a greater commentary on the cinematic matches. That's what I'm going to call them. I know Lucha Underground, they were big for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so essentially, you know, it's the reason why I like them is because it shows a respect for history. And, you know, if you've been a wrestling fan for a while, you know that Taker rode a motorcycle. You know he was Ministering Darkness. They incorporated all that. Same thing with Bray Wyatt. You know, he was the cult leader from the South. John Cena was the guy in the trunks. And so, you know, that's why I enjoyed him. Hopefully that does mean that they'll probably do a lot. I heard they did a lot of ad-libbing between AJ and, you know, The Undertaker. And that's kind of what I got into it. You know, definitely is something that I hope grows. But unfortunately, the track record with WWE right now doesn't give me hope.
Yeah, I really, for the most part, I really enjoyed what they did. And like I said earlier, the Boneyard match I loved. The Firefly Funhouse match was, I thought, very entertaining. And I preferred night one over night two. You can do it. You could do more of this type of stuff. You can't do it all the time. It would be like if, you know, Matt Hardy, when he did Final Deletion. If we got Final Deletion on Impact every week. After a while, it would get old. But every now and then, I think there's absolutely a place for this type of filmmaking. They can make these little...
And I think you hit the right point.
Yeah.
That's why I couldn't get into Lucha Underground. That's all they did. And hey, great, right? You know, if you're into that. But for me, I had like kind of misgivings going into this WrestleMania. I'm like, do I even pay the $9.99? And I thought, well, what the heck? How many times is Taker going to do this? Which feels like forever. But I really liked it. It showed respect to his lineage. They didn't make AJ look too bad. And then I'm going into the Firefly Funhouse. I'm going, it can't be good. It's probably going to suck. And then I'm blown away at how well they did it.
It was definitely, it was not what I expected. Let me just say, I'm going to let you go, but it was not what I expected. But I think overall that that's a good thing, because they were trying to tell a story. I was entertained by different parts of it. Somebody chimed in with their, let me go through some of these super chats here. By the way, the super chats are still open. We still got them streaming on in. So if you want to donate, please, you know, get them in now, because we'll wrap up in a little bit here. And there are special WrestleMania donations listed down in the description box. But there was somebody who just sent a super chat in who had an explanation for the NWO part. So I want to get to that. Already, thank you for the $1.99. Andrew, earlier, says, how much of a tease was Randy Orton thinking he was going to wrestle in pants? Yes, we don't really get to see that very often. Marcus Metcalf with the $5. Thank you. And we have Mundane Wrestling Butthole yet again with the $5 super chat. Anthony Analog and Jared Jackson with the $10 drop. Was wondering my thoughts on the Funhouse match ending with The Fiend also beating Goldberg and also writing that wrong as well, reversing the damage done to his character. Sorry, Strowman. Yeah, I mean, you could have done it. There's no point. It's just leave the past in the past. What's done is done. You can't unring that bell. You know, it is what it is. And then we've got Deadpool. Shout out to Deadpool, $5. And here we go. Jose Alaguna with the $1.99 super chat says, John Cena's NWO spot was his heel turn that he mentioned. That's interesting. That is interesting, because John Cena at one point did talk about the fact that he was going to turn heel. I think it was after WrestleMania 20, was it after 28? I think in 2012. And he had gear made, he had new music, he was ready. He was on board, he was getting ready for the heel turn, and then Vince McMahon said, we're not doing it. We're not moving ahead with it. He makes too much in merch, we're not doing it. So I know about that heel turn, like that aborted heel turn, basically. So I'm not sure if that's what it's in reference to or not. But that's an interesting observation. Could be. Could be a reference to the heel turn that never came. Dry chicken without flavor. Ugh, one of the worst things in the world. Dry chicken without flavor. I bet WWE was filming Mandy Rose and Otis were popping a little bit of the bubbly to celebrate their love for each other in a hotel room. Well, I guess we'll find out if the hacker can really, you know, hack things. Maybe the sex tape is coming. Mandy and Otis. There's a question for everybody in the chat, all you pervs out there. Would you watch a Mandy and Otis sex tape? Mandy's a very attractive woman. I'd have to think about that. I'd have to give that some thought. I am the guy who donated 50 pounds today's. Just donated via Super Chat. Oh, wait, hold on a second here. Let me see. I got to see if I can replay this here. This might be... Again, sometimes these things get converted, and I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here, but it looks like this guy may have just dropped $130 on me here in this stream, which is unbelievable if he just did that. But I'm not 100% sure yet, so we'll have to verify that. But Jose donated again. He says, Hogan turned heel. He was a big baby face, and Cena wanted to turn heel, and it would have been as big, if not bigger, than Hogan's. I don't know. That's a good question. That's a good question. The heel turn, if John Cena would have turned heel, if John Cena would have turned heel, it would not have been as big as Hulk Hogan's heel turn in 96. See, I don't think that people, let me talk about this for a second. Because I know there's a lot of divided opinion about Hulk Hogan. I don't want to get into the whole thing, Hogan is a human being and all that, because he's done a lot of fucking stupid stuff and he's... You know, not always the greatest human. But as far as his place in wrestling is concerned, and Chad's going to be very upset when he hears me say that. But as far as his place in wrestling is concerned, Hogan has a very unique distinction that nobody could take away from him. And I don't think anybody will ever be able to equal or will ever be able to top. And that is the fact that he had that run that he had in the 80s, which was as big as any run that anybody has ever had. Okay? The years that he was on top in WWE and he was the champion. Hulkamania, brother, right? Hogan then, many years later, when he was a lot older, went to a different company and he turned heel and he joined the NWO and it changed the entire wrestling business. It was a key event in the Monday Night War. It was a gigantic event. I cannot think of anybody else in this country, in a major wrestling promotion, who can honestly say that he basically changed the business two different times, in two different eras, in two different companies. There is nobody else who can say that. But Hogan did it. Hogan did it. So I just think that's something that he needs to be recognized for. So when you say that John Cena, his heel turn would have been as big or bigger than Hogan's, yeah, to a lot of the little kids maybe who didn't grow up with Hogan. But by no means do I believe that that would have been as big as the Hogan heel turn in 96. The Hogan heel turn in 96 was transformational. It was transformational, what happened back in 96. Chris Quillman, thank you for the $5, my friend. Appreciate that. Shaquan Hickman with the $5. Clearly Cena was doing his best disciple impression with the NWO stuff, brother. And Matthew Garrett, thank you for the drop. And again, I am the guy who donated 50 pounds today's. Sent in another super chat. Can I be a mod? I might let you be a mod. Send me an email. For all the support you're throwing my way, it's the least I can do. I think that earlier super chat, somebody, I think Ufman in the chat mentioned that converts to over $100 American. So thank you. Thank you very much for the support. I appreciate that. Everybody who's still donating. Everybody who's still donating. Andrew. Andrew Kugel, thank you. Let's take a few more calls, then we'll wrap up, because we got a lot of people waiting on the line here. I want to try to just, get to a few more, and I believe we have somebody up in, I think it's Canada. Is this Angel?
My name's Angel, the realest G on the block, straight out of the six, and looking at this Mania card, it was pretty good, but the one match I was looking forward to the most, and the one match I think was built up the most, has got to be the Baron Corbin and Elias match. I thought was the best match on the show, hands down. No other match can top this. And it's such a shame that we don't get to see any more classics between Roman Reigns and Baron Corbin. I thought those were just phenomenal with the dog food and everything.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And tonight, I thought the best match had to be Liv Morgan and Natalya. I thought it was the right outcome.
Oh, my goodness.
Best match on the show.
Absolutely. Listen, I thought that the Liv Morgan match tonight with Natalya, and I can't even believe I'm about to say this, but I believe that the Liv Morgan match that we saw tonight on that kickoff show with Natalya has replaced Melina and Alicia Fox as the greatest women's match in the history of WWE. I mean, it was unbelievable what we saw on that kickoff show tonight, and it's a shame that some people didn't tune in for the kickoff show, so they didn't see it. I mean, the athleticism and the story and the drama and the commentary and just every aspect of that, I was on the edge of my seat. I couldn't believe it. I was sweating bullets. I had goosebumps. You could see goosebumps. Look at this. I'm a hairy fucking beast. Goosebumps on my arms. I couldn't believe that match. Natty with the blood pouring down her face and Liv Morgan, you know, with the whole, you know, the nipple ring thing. I mean, I couldn't believe what happened with that. Holy shit. I mean, that was a classic Iron Woman match, Iron Man match that we had on the kickoff show tonight. So, yeah, man, look, it blew me away. I mean, there was nothing that could top it. I feel bad for all the other matches that came after it because nobody could follow them. You're not going to troll me. Let's go to, let's see here, Rhode Island. We got a caller from Rhode Island. He's just having some fun. Lee. Lee from Rhode Island.
Hello, Soul Monster. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Lee. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Quarantine, decided to, shed a few pounds, so I'm doing pretty good.
Awesome. So what did you think of night two of WrestleMania?
Night two? It was pretty good. It was pretty good for the most part, pretty solid. Except for the last man standing match where I just passed right out in the middle of it. I could not stay awake to save my life.
Well, I mean, let's focus on the Firefly Funhouse match. I want to hear your overall impressions of what you thought of. If I could even call it a match, I keep calling it a match. I mean, it really wasn't a match. It was a an experience.
Oh my goodness! I've never taken LSD before, but if that's what it's like, I think I'm good. But I thought the match was actually pretty awesome for the most part. And the one thing you kept on reiterating about was the whole NWO stuff. And I think I can explain that for you.
Okay.
Okay. I think the message, I think it was some sort of a deep-rooted message, not as deep and convoluted, but it was like, compare Cena to Hogan. Hogan sold out and gained all this control of the wrestling world in one leg drop, and I'm guessing Randy Savage back in 96. He gained control of the wrestling world on and off screen. So the heel turn you talked about, imagine if Cena turned heel not after WrestleMania 28, but what if he actually sided with the Authority back in 2014 and he gained all that power? That's what I got out of it.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting, again, I don't know if that's really what they were going for, but I mean, I do think that's an interesting idea. That's why I love hearing different idea. Everyone has their own interpretation of what, you know, different things mean. But I just don't think that's probably what they were going for. I just realized something. I forgot to run the results of the poll here. I have to show you guys where the Twitter poll stands. I can't believe I forgot that. We had over, 5,000 votes. In, I think, for night one. Let us take a look. Well, we're not done yet. Let us take a look at what you guys think so far of how night two of WrestleMania compares to night one. So far, we've got over 3,300 votes. That's very similar to what the poll numbers were yesterday. Almost identical. Wow. I think the thumbs-up ratio for last night at this time was 72 or 73%. And right now, so far, here for night two, it's 74.4%. Thumbs up. 25.6% thumbs down. Again, you can vote at Solomonster on Twitter. Is the place to go to vote and let me know, let the world know what you thought of WrestleMania Night 2. As we roll along here, yeah, Michael Cole says how Raw rolls on. Well, we roll on here on the stream as the Super Chats continue to fly on in. Did I mention Lone Wolf? Well, I am now. Lone Wolf, thank you for the $10. And Matthew Garrett, holy shnikey, $50 super chat. Creepy Jeff Hardy says, I cannot wait for Seth against Drew. With Seth's skewed view of what it means to be a top guy and how the crowd was turning on Drew, it's going to be money. Stay safe in New York City. Do you reckon John Cena will ever turn heel? Cena had his window to turn heel. I think those days are gone. I don't even know what the point would be anymore. I mean, he can't even make that many appearances. He's not a full-time wrestler. Physically, he can't do it. I think he even said that. Even tonight, WrestleMania, I mean, he didn't really have to put a lot of effort physically into what he did. So what would it even mean at this point for John Cena to turn heel? You know, it feels like it's 10 years too late. It's kind of like Undertaker and Sting. They waited so long. 10 years too late. I don't really see the point in doing it. If it hasn't happened by now, I don't think it's going to happen. Do we have Mario on the line?
Hi. Hey, Jason. How's it going?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm good. I don't know if you remember this. I emailed you. I used to live in Egypt, like way, way back in the day. I emailed you about my first show, like almost like, what, 8 years ago or something like that. I don't know if you'd remember. I live in Maryland now, but I just saw WrestleMania. Holy crap, that was a good show.
So overall or specifically night two?
Well, overall, like I had a little drinking game with a buddy of mine. Every time we would see the big ass fan, we would take a shot. So I'm a little tipsy.
It's the best way to watch WrestleMania.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I have a few quick thoughts, if you bear with me.
Sure.
There were some, like, really good matches, like, surprisingly good matches, like the ladder match and Bryan and Sami Zayn. There were some good matches. I really hate what they did to Shayna and Rhea Ripley. Like, I really hope one of them at least would win, and I hope it would be Rhea, to be honest. And then there was this long last man standing match. I fell asleep. it was long.
Yeah.
It should not have been 40 minutes.
No. And again, I feel bad. I really wanted to like that match. And when it was over, I just, the feeling I had was disappointment when it was over.
Yeah. Yes, I really hate that Edge had to have his first match back, like, in an empty arena. They should have, like, postponed that match, or, like, his first match back should have been in front of a live crowd, because that was just doing him dirty, honestly. And it was way too long. The Goldberg and Lesnar matches, they were short and sweet, let's call it like that, but they should have been short. Like, I'm okay with that. I'm not okay with Drew kicking out from the first F5. That was kind of wrong. Like, they protected that finish way, way too long, and to have Drew McIntyre kick out at one, it was kind of wrong though. And as for the big two that everyone's talking about, the Funhouse, the Firefly Funhouse, and the Boneyard matches, They were great. Like, I really loved that they actually, like, they were absolutely fantastic, actually. It was, you get the what-the-fuck vibes while watching them, but, like, in a positive way.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I absolutely loved it. Like, they took a huge gamble on it, and it paid off, like, in a big way. It was really good. And I really hope all of Undertaker's matches I like that in the future, if he's going to have. I was disappointed by two things in the Boneyard match. The fact that Taker did not come out to the Limp Bizkit team. Yeah, that was kind of disappointing. And I really thought, like, what's their faces? Galloway and whatever his name is. The other guy. Oh, God, I forgot.
Brock Lesnar. That other guy. That other jabron. Yeah, what's his name? Yeah.
Yeah. So Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson. There we go. They were opening the doors. I really, really hoped that Demon Finn Balor would emerge. That would have been really, really good. And, like, a way to bring him back into the club. I really thought that was going to happen, but no, there were just a couple other jabrons. So
yeah, I'm not even sure. Even sure if he's in this country. He might be one of those guys like Pete Dunne who's stranded overseas. I don't know where he's living these days.
So we may not
be seeing the Demon or the or regular Finn Balor for a while.
So. But no, and overall, like, overall WrestleMania was really good. But like I said, there was a couple disappointments, but, like, overall show was really great. Like, I enjoyed it. And, yeah, that drinking game helped. Helped through, like,
drinking games
matches.
Always that's, help. Always.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
Fantastic.
It doesn't matter,
yeah,
if it's
fantastic.
It doesn't matter if it's WrestleMania. It doesn't matter if it's the Backlash. It doesn't matter if it's if it's main event.
That fantastic segment you were talking about between Natalya and Liv Morgan. Oh my God, that classic!
It's an absolute Matt classic that will be talked about for years to come.
Yes. It's Trish versus Lita part two.
Trish versus Lita. They can't hold a candle to what we saw tonight on that kickoff.
Exactly. Like, oh my God, that was just, I needed that match in my life. Yes.
Well, listen, I always enjoy talking to you. And I do remember, actually, your old messages. So it was cool that you were able to get through tonight and call in again soon.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. You too. Have a good night. So that was Mario. I want to make sure I say his name right. I get yelled at when I say Mario. That's how I grew up saying Super Mario. Super Mario. No, it's Mario. Okay. I'll behave myself from now on. Mario. Mario and Luigi. Let's go to Zach. If Zach is there, Zach. Hold on a second. Why is this not? There we go. Zach.
Yeah.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. So, regarding the outcomes of the Raw and NXT Women's Title matches, what do you think is going to happen next with that? Because I have a good idea.
You mean the Raw Women's Championship and the NXT Women's Championship?
Yeah.
Well, Becky's still got the Raw Women's title. Charlotte has the NXT Women's Championship. You think that is going to, they're going to be linked in some way? Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, for me, I think Becky is good. It's just going to be beaten by Ronda at some point. And then Charlotte's going to just drop it to Io, maybe? Io Dry?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I mean, look, I guess that's one of the potential positives, if you want to look at the positives of Charlotte winning the NXT championship, is the fact that now, you know, she has some other new faces and opponents to mix it up with. So we could see, we've already seen Charlotte and Bianca just got, it looks like she got promoted. So Charlotte and Io, Charlotte and Dakota Kai, Charlotte and Tegan Knox. You know, they have a whole bunch of new women down there, you know, Shotzi Blackheart's doing her thing. So it does open up some potential, you know, fresh matches for her. But again, you know, do we really need to see Charlotte in NXT? And what is it really going to mean in the end? I just would have put Rhea over stronger than she even came off tonight. And she came off pretty strong, even in defeat. But I would have put her over strong and, you know, had her get a big win at WrestleMania. I do wonder if maybe they altered some of the finishes because of the situation. I wonder if we were in a big stadium, for example, how many of these match finishes would have been different than what we saw last night and tonight? If any. And if so, which ones? What match finishes might have been different had they been able to do this, the show in a stadium full of people? Let's go to, I think we might have Oscar on the line.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Oscar.
All right. How you doing, Solo Monster?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, man. I just want to say that, like, I really enjoyed WrestleMania for what it was, mm-hmm. even though besides the fact that, like, the uncircumstances of the coronavirus and stuff. But I just want to say, like, the best matches on there was the Firefly Funhouse and the Boneyard match. But I just want to talk about the Firefly Funhouse.
Sure.
I just want to say, in my opinion, I think that was probably, like, the best match of the night. I know some people may disagree with me on there, but, like, I just think, in my opinion, I just think, like, that's, like, the true definition of trickiness. I know I don't do, like, shrooms and all, but, like, let's say if I, like, if I were to, like, do some shrooms while watching this match, I'd probably trip the fuck out, like, honestly. Like, and, I really like that Boneyard match, though. I really do.
And, the Boneyard match was probably, if I had to say what was my favorite match at WrestleMania overall, it was probably the Boneyard match.
I agree. And I have another question.
Sure.
What do you think was going to happen next with the Fiend?
What do I think is going to happen next with the Fiend? What brand is the Fiend is technically on SmackDown. So if the Fiend is going to face somebody from SmackDown, he has already faced Daniel Bryan. He has already faced The Miz, who's in a tag team now anyway. Roman Reigns, who he probably was going to be defending the championship against until Vince McMahon decided he wanted to bring back Goldberg on short notice and did the title change. It was probably going to be Roman and The Fiend. So it could be Roman Reigns. You know, it could be Roman Reigns, it could be Braun Strowman, and maybe The Fiend gets his championship back. They try to make up for the fuck-up that they did in Saudi Arabia. But you know what? They already took the championship off of him. I wouldn't even rush it back onto him so quickly. You know, just take your time, let him keep winning, try to you know, build him back up if you can in the eyes of some of the people who maybe don't look at him the same way as they did since he lost to Goldberg. So Roman, there's Strowman. I'm trying to think who else might be on that SmackDown brand that would make sense for a feud. It would have to be a big name. And those are the two right now that stand out to me more than anyone else. Let's go to Tony. I think this is Tony in Texas.
Hey, Solomons, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Oh, man, another day in paradise. Thank you for asking. Hey, really just like a dialogue thing, like seeing WrestleMania last night, I absolutely thought the Braun Strowman-Goldberg match was absolute crap. And it seemed like a lot of people really shared that sentiment. But then tonight, it seems like people are kind of digging the Brock Lesnar and Drew McIntyre match, which I don't understand because I think they both kind of share in the same kind of match format, and I wasn't a fan of that match. I thought it was on the par with like Goldberg and Braun Strowman from last night, and I don't know, maybe the difference could have been in the buildup of Brock and Drew McIntyre, where Goldberg and Braun just kind of got put together like on Friday. So I just want to know your thoughts on that.
Yeah, they were very similar. You know, you have these two championship matches that I don't know what the final match time was on the Lesnar-McIntyre. I mean, that probably couldn't have gone longer than 4 minutes, somewhere in that four-minute range, 3-4 minutes. Goldberg and Strowman, I think, went 2:10, 2 minutes and 10 seconds. So you've got these championship matches. We're so used to having these long championship, like 20, 30-minute epics at WrestleMania. And we didn't get that at all this year. We got a throwaway title match that meant absolutely nothing last night that went 2 minutes. And then we had a very straightforward basic match here tonight between Lesnar and Drew. You know, they went for their finishes a whole bunch of times. It didn't even go 5 minutes, I don't think. And then it was just kind of over. So this was not a WrestleMania that was really built on any really strong championship matches, I think, outside of the ladder match for the SmackDown Tag Team titles, really. You know, there was no U.S. title defense. Actually, the NXT women's title. I think the NXT women's title match and the SmackDown Tag Team title match were the two best championship matches on either night. Sammy and Bryan for the IC was enjoyable but too short. The SmackDown women's title match tonight was good. I thought that was good. And that's really all that I can say. You know, the two world title matches were just, they felt very, just almost like throwaway matches in a way. It was definitely not the most exciting Brock Lesnar match that I have ever seen. Durin Wellesley, thank you for the Super Chat. Dried chicken without flavor with another $5 drop. Says, I love Blinding Light by The Weeknd, but I wish it wasn't the WrestleMania 36 song. They stole AEW Double or Nothing 2's idea. Matthew Garrett with the $5. Says, I meant mind games of Seth Rollins trying to convince Drew that the crowd will turn on Drew just like they did with Seth. It is money. Yeah, that would be a natural explanation. They'll turn on you like they turn on me. But that's kind of borrowing from Daniel Bryan, right? Daniel Bryan, when he was a heel, said that we were all fickle. The fickle fans. Ian Israel with the $2 Super Chat. And Inner Alchemist. Boy, I must have butchered that one. Is that how you pronounce that? I probably just fucked it up. I'm sorry. Thank you for the Super Chat. Matthew Garrett again with the $1.99. And James Herrera. Man, you guys have been awesome. All the support that you guys have thrown my way this weekend with both streams, I cannot thank you enough. It really does mean the world to me. I think we're going to wrap up here. It's a good spot to call it a night. WrestleMania 36 is in the books. And overall, I thought just a very middle-of-the-road WrestleMania. My favorite match of either night was probably the Boneyard match. I just enjoyed the creativity of it. And unlike something like the Last Man Standing match, did not overstay its welcome. Went about 20 minutes. They did their spots. You know, they went on top of the car, on top of the barn, the shed. 20 minutes and they were gone. But that Last Man Standing match tonight was never ending. And I still cannot believe that this was a taped match and nobody had enough sense to say, we ought to cut 10 minutes out of this thing. They really didn't do those guys any favors. I feel like when they're in the middle of doing that match, they don't necessarily know that this thing is dragging. They're just in the middle of it. And they must feel like, oh, this is some great big epic match. And if you watch it back, it really isn't. You know, it really isn't. And in that respect, I thought it was very disappointing. If I had to give WrestleMania 36 a score from 1 to 10, what would I give the event overall? It's a good question. I would probably give the event about a 5.5. 5.5 to 6. Sounds about right to me. I cannot justifiably go higher than that. This will not go down as one of the greatest WrestleManias of all time. They worked with what they had, and what they had wasn't much. But it just did not have those WrestleMania moments and that feel to it that a WrestleMania should have. So in a lot of ways, it's a lost year. Hopefully, they're able to come back and have one next year. Who knows? Who knows at this point what's going to be? I hope for all of our sakes we have WrestleMania next year. If we can have WrestleMania next year in a stadium, that's a good sign. That's a good sign for everybody. So thank you to everybody who is still tuning in. We still had 2,000 people as of a few minutes ago who were still hanging on here after midnight. Thank you very much. Thank you for all of your support from the AEW Dynamite stream on Wednesday, the WrestleMania predictions on Thursday, both streams last night and tonight. I'm going to be back live right here again on YouTube this Wednesday for AEW Dynamite, the big recap here on YouTube. Again, as I mentioned earlier, I know some people were having notifications problems, and hopefully we can solve that. If you click that bell, you can set notifications for all the time, none of the time, sometimes. Make sure you have all the time notifications set, so whenever something new goes up, you will be alerted, and you will know when I'm going live here on YouTube. So have yourselves a great week. Be well, stay safe. Thank you, as always, for all of the super chats and all of your support. And I will see you back here again for AEW Dynamite on Wednesday night. And stay tuned to the channel. There'll be clips going up over the next couple days from episode 646. Until next time, take care, guys.